Okay, here we go. We're on Yud Beis Amid Beis towards the bottom, continuing with the story of the birth of Moshe, and we're, believe it or not, we're going to finish it and move on to another story. So we're in the next part, now that the baby has been found. So the Torah continues. Vatomer lo bas paro, Paro's daughter said to Miriam, well, she said, Lehi, go. And then dot, v'chulo. And what's the dot? So the girl, Miriam, the parsa, went and summoned the boy's mother. In other words, we'll see what's going on. Remember we said last Thursday that Moshe would not nurse from the non-Jewish wet nurses. Yeah. That's the last thing we ended off. So if he wouldn't nurse from the non-Jewish wet nurses, the baby's going to starve. So daughter of Paro, Miriam, remember, she's been hanging around to see what's going to happen. So the daughter of Paro tells her, go find a Jewish wet nurse. So Miriam goes. And who does she summon? None other than Moshe's mother. If you're going to have to find a Jewish wet nurse, might as well be his mother. Now, the daughter of Paro doesn't know that. Okay? So now what do you see? It's number one. Amar Rabbi Lozer. Rabbi Lozer says, Melamed Shehocha Bizrizus Ke'alma. Number one, we see she did it with alacrity, like an alma. An alma means a girl with full strength. That's what the Targum. The Targum says when we say chazak ve'ematz, the Aramaic is tekef ve'alem. Alem, there's a Hebrew, a modern Hebrew word, hit almut. You know what hit almut means? Exercising. So that's what it means. You go to the gym, lehitalem, to exercise, to get strong, to be energetic. So it the Torah says when she said to go, it said in the Alma, the energetic young girl went. So that's a reference to Miriam. So Blazer says she went with Zrizus, with alacrity. That's how he understands the word Alma. Now, the Chiddush is, how old was Miriam at this time? She was only 3. She's a young girl. It's hard to be as energetic. So she was energetic like an older girl already, who's like 12, 13, 14, achveis. So she was very energetic. Pshat number one. Pshat number two, Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani Omar. Alma, when it says, Miriam's called the Alma, because there's another root. Shehalima Esferesh. She concealed the facts. She didn't mention, number one, that she was Moshe's sister, and number two, that she was getting her mother to do this. Okay, now, look at this. She was discreet on these points because she wished to conceal her prior prophecy, as we said before, and if people would know about it, it would endanger the baby. Same, she had a prophecy that the child would be a savior. Okay, fine. So she said, okay, so now, continuing. Vatomer la Basparo. So Basparo now she brings her mother. Miriam brings her mother. Okay, here I found a Jewish wet nurse. So now the daughter of Paro says to Yocheved, not knowing that Yocheved is the mother of Moshe, she says, Helich Yezoze, take this boy and nurse him for me. So it takes 2 years to nurse the baby. So you're going to be the nurse now. So look what you get out of all. See how everything comes out good. Amar Rab Chama Barab Chanina. Rab Chama says, number one, Misnaba Veinu Yodas Ma Misnaba. Paro's daughter was prophesizing, but she's unaware of what she was prophesizing. Because what was the word she said? She said, Helichi. Helichi means, it's a combination of Ha Shelichi, which means that which belongs to you. In other words, she didn't understand what she was saying, the wording she used. On top of that, she said, now nurse the baby, and guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to give you your pay. I'm going to pay you for it. Of course, you have to pay a wet nurse. So what do you see from this? It's not enough that the righteous get their lost objects returned to them. Moshe was a lost object, was returned. It's not enough, but what else? But they also get reward for their trouble. She was rewarded for efforts by, because remember, she was supplying, when she helped little babies get born, remember? She was one of the midwives. So she got a reward now, that now she's getting paid by the daughter of Paro to nurse her own son. Okay. Now, it says at this point, what happens next? More concludes. Vatikach Miriam HaNeviah Achos Aaron. This is a little bit later on now. Now we're going forward now. We're talking about after the splitting of the sea. We're jumping ahead now. It says that Miriam the prophet is the sister of Aaron. Dot, dot, dot. It's important. Dot, dot, dot. She took a drum in her hand and led the ladies in song separately of the Shira, the song of the sea. So it's very interesting. What's unusual over here? It says, how are they describing Miriam, a Neviah, and also describing her as the sister of Aaron? Well, what about the sister of Moshe? What happened to that part? Achos Aaron, velo achos Moshe. Is she the sister of Aaron and not the sister of Moshe? Amarav Amram, Amarav, Rav Amram, Amarav says, Va'amrile, and some say, Amarav Nachman, Amarav. Some say he said it. It teaches us that she prophesied while she was still only the sister of Aaron, meaning before Moshe was born. We're calling her Hanaviah, the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, that she was already a prophetess when she only was the sister of Aaron and not the sister of Moshe, that she prophesied that some great things would come from this baby.
How old was she then?
Three. No, no, she was... One second. No, no, no. One second. I'm making...
She
was seven.
That doesn't make sense.
One second. She was the oldest, right? She was seven. When Moshe was born...
No, she was three.
No, I made a mistake. She's seven. She was seven. I made a mistake. She's seven. One was seven. She's seven. Aaron was three. I think we're mixing it up. Well, either way, one was seven, one was three when Moshe was born. But that's when she prophesied. Sivasites of young age. All right, moving on to the top of the next page. What was her prophecy? Vomeres, and she said in the beginning, Asida imi shetele ben shemoshias Yisrael. My mother's going to give birth to a son who will be a savior for the Jewish people. That's what she was saying before he was born. You gotta remarry, Dad, because you know the great leader could come. See, you see where great leaders come from. Amram on his own said, divorce them all, right? We don't need it anymore. He said, no, you gotta remarry them. What are you talking about? Remarrying the Holocaust, they're gonna get killed. And many did get killed. Many got killed. But many get killed, but one survives, and he was the one that changed the world. And look what happened. Vikiv and Shinoilid Moshe. When Moshe was born, we already saw Nismali Kolabais Kulor. The entire house was filled with his light. So, listen how it's Omar Avia, her father Amram came. Venoshkal Roshe gave her a kiss on her head.
Miriam.
The father,
Amram,
Amram, who did I say, gave Miriam,
Miriam
a kiss on the head.
Yeah.
Omar Allah, he said, Abiti, my daughter, Nishkaimavel, so your prophecy's been fulfilled. Look at the light that shined for him. Huh? But not so fast. They gave and Shehitila the Or, but once they had to put him in the Nile River. Now the odds of him surviving the Nile River were not, and the Nile River is not like a little stream, little creek. It's a river. Alright, imagine a fast, hey, come on.
Okay, I'll come back.
Imagine a fast flowing river. You know, with rocks and stuff like that. It's not exactly promising. So now that she had to put him in the river, the father proceeded to give her a tap on the head. Like not a potch, but like a zog, you know, like to criticize. Amar Allah, he says to her, Biti, my daughter, what happened to your prophecy? Right? How can he save the Jewish people if he's going to die in the river? Oh, so the father, it's interesting, you know, what's going on with the father? He's the Godel Ador. So first he divorces, then he marries, then he sees the kids born with the light. Oh, you were amazing. Then they have to throw him into the river. Oh, what's wrong with you? It's very hard to understand Amram's behavior. But here's the point we're going to emphasize on. This is what we said way back. V'hainu d'chsiv, and now you understand the significance of that pasuk when it said, his sister stationed herself at a distance. When she put the baby in the water, she stayed. Why? What was the point of it? The Torah says, Ladea Maas, to know what would happen with him.
Yeah.
So what does that mean, to know what happened? Leda ma yehei besof nevoso, to know what happened as a resolution of a prophecy. In other words, she knew that he was going to live. She just didn't know how he was going to be saved. See, she knew he had to be saved. She wanted to see how. She wasn't sure and wanted to know if. She knew he was, but wanted to know how. So that's what happened. And remember, we go back. So 80 years after she stood from a distance watching her brother baby, right? She stood with the entire Jewish people when the Jewish people were let out. Okay? And that's the whole idea. Remember, we said earlier that because she waited for Moshe, the Jewish people waited for her when she had the leprosy. That was the Mishnah we learned 4 pages ago, that says merit for merit. So that was what she did. All right, this is the end of the story of Moshe and Miriam. And now we go to the next part of the Mishnah, which discusses Yosef HaTzadik. The Mishnah said that Yosef was also merited. Yosef Zacha, Yosef merited. What was that? He merited to bury his father. So now we're going to have a whole discussion for the balance of the day of the burial of Yaakov. Okay, it's a few parshas away. So Mora asks the question, my shno mi kor dechsev, what is it initially when the Torah describes the people going to the land of Canaan to bury Yaakov? The following is written. It says, Vayal Yosef likboros aviv. Yosef went up to bury his father. That's what it says. And who went with him? Vayalo ito, and who went with him? Kol avdei paro. All of Paro's servants went up with him. That's one pasuk. Another pasuk says about the burial, Vahadar, later on it says, Vachol beis Yosef ve'echavu beis aviv, and all of Yosef's household, and his brothers, and his father's household. So, that's what it also says in the burial. Keep going. Umayshal Sopo. Then at the end, when it describes everybody coming back, what does it say? It says, Vayoshev Yosef Mitzrayim Huvechav. It says, Yosef went back to Mitzrayim, him and his brothers. And then it says, Vahadr. Then it says, Vachol Oli Mitolik Parasachiv, and all who went up to bury his father. In other words, the question is like this. When it was time to bury the father, and they're going to Eretz Yisrael, first it says Yosef and the Egyptians. And then it says his brothers and the family. But on the way back, it says Yosef and his family, and then it says the Egyptians. Right? So why is it changing the order, going and coming back? So Rabbi Yochanan says, V'tchila, in the beginning, at shelo ro b'chvodim shel Yisrael, before the Egyptians saw the honor that was accorded to Yisrael at the funeral, we'll see what that is that's coming up. We haven't seen it yet. So lo nagu b'hen ko, so they didn't treat the rest of Yaakov's children with respect. In other words, at the burial, really the Egyptians only respected Yosef. They respected Yosef. He was the viceroy. He says, listen, this is my father's funeral. I have to take him to Israel. So they said, fine, okay, you're the viceroy. You go first. We'll follow you. And your brothers, they just happen to be your relatives. So they go in the back. We'll see in a minute that during the funeral, they saw how esteemed Yaakov was held in the eyes of the rest of the world. And once they saw that, then they figured they might as well give kavod to the brothers. And on the way back, the brothers get to go ahead of them. That's the thrust of the answer. We'll have to now see the details. Ulubsov, at the end, when they came back, Shirobichvodim, they saw their honor that they should have. Then, Nogubokovod, they gave him honor. Now, how do we know this? And something happened in the middle where all of a sudden they realized what kind of personality Yaakov was. They thought he was a holy man. They know that he blessed the Nile River and the 7 years of hunger stopped after 2 years, so they didn't know that. Okay, so he's a holy Kabbalist. Does he have a big reputation in the world? You know, you have big Kabbalists in Israel, but I don't think the UN recognizes them as great people. So, but now what happened, this is the story. The Yechsev, it says, during the funeral, it says, Vayavo ad Goren Ha'atod. Literally, it means they came to a place that was called Goren Ha'atod. A Goren is a threshing floor. Atod means thorns. It's a very unusual word. They came to the threshing floor of thorns. There's no such thing. And that's what Gemara asks. Vechi Goren Yesh Lalo Atod? Is it possible that threshing floor has thorns? You don't harvest thorns and then thresh them. It's obviously a play on words to something much more than that. Amar Rav Avo, Rose says, Malamidi teaches us that as they were in the middle of the funeral, Shekifu Ksarim, that the kings, the many kings that we're going to see in a minute of the land of Israel, they surrounded Yaakov's coffin with their crowns. We'll see why. And what did it look like? Kigoren, so it's like a threshing floor building, Shemakivin Lota, that people surround with thorn bushes for security measures. In other words, in the olden days, the threshing floor, just like they didn't have barbed wired fence in those days, so a threshing floor is a spot that's very open for theft. Threshing floor is where you store up all of grain. So what do you do at night? Someone's going to want to rob. So what do? You spread thorns all around it to make sure that nobody breaks in. So now what happened was, during the funeral, we'll see why, all the non-Jewish kings, when they saw this was the funeral of Yaakov, they surrounded his coffin with their crowns. They put their crowns out of respect. So it was like surrounding a threshing floor with thorns. Let's see what happened. It's a story. Shabo b'nei Esav, as they heard about the funeral, the sons of Esav, u'b'nei Yishmol, and the sons of Yishmol, u'b'nei Keturah, and the descendants of Keturah. Remember at the end of this week's Parsha, we see that Avram remarries Keturah, a.k.a. Hagar. He remarries Hagar, and he has, I believe, 6 children with them, if I'm not mistaken, and sends them away. But anyway, you got the sons of Esav, because remember now, Yaakov, when Yaakov dies, he has his sons. Esav has his sons. Esav has sons. Yishmael is already a generation earlier. He has his sons. Keturah is a generation earlier. He has his sons. And what do they come for? All right, they came and Tana Brisa taught, Kulam Lamachamabal. They all came to fight. Why? Because they wanted to prevent Yaakov from being buried in the Maaris HaMachpelah. It was already disputed long ago. Everybody recognized that Adam and Chava were buried there. It's this week's Parsha. Avram and Sarah were buried there. Okay. Yitzchak and Leah and Rivka are buried there. There's only 2 spots left. And by this point, also, who also was buried there? Leah was buried there. She died already. Leah died already. 7 out of the 8 spots were taken. There's 1 spot left. Now, whoever gets buried next, that means they are the scion of the Jewish people. In other words, this becomes the ultimate decision of who the holy place is going to be. You got a lot of people who'd like to get that spot because they're all descendants of Abraham. And some of them are descendants of Yitzchak. So they want to get a shot to be in there. So you see, long ago there was disputes who should get buried in there. So they come to make a war. But Kivin, Shiro, Kisr, Shol Yosef, once they saw that Yosef's crown, Yosef, the viceroy of Egypt, which was the most powerful country in the world, Toli Baron Shol Aaron, they saw it was hanging from Yaakov's coffin. Then not lukulam kisraim. They all took their crowns off of their heads, right? V'tolum ba'arona shel Yaakov, and they hung them around Yaakov's coffin, because since Yosef was the viceroy of the superpower. Remember, this was after the hunger. All the countries of the world didn't have food. They all had to give all their money. So Mitzrayim was a superpower. So therefore, they surrounded the king with their crowns to say, just as a threshing facility and its hedge of thorns exists only for the sake of the wheat produced there, so too the entire world existed only for the sake of Yaakov. They recognized at that moment that despite their kingdoms and armies, they were merely a peripheral aspect of creation, a collection of thorns, while Yaakov was his essence. For that moment, there was that one moment of truth. One moment of truth. You know, sometimes the world has that. There's a moment of truth that the UN votes it should be a state of Israel. Just for a moment. Yeah. Not for long, but just for a moment. So let's see how many crowns were there. Tana Brisa says, Shloshim Veshisha Ksarim Nitla Baronisha Yaakov. 36 crowns were put around Yaakov's coffin. How do you get 36? So Rashi is like this. Well, 1 crown belonged to Yosef. That's number 1. Now, the next 12 crowns were the 12 princes of Yishmol. that you're going to find at the end of this week's parsha. Yishmael has 12
sons.
Some, not sons, but they became families, and 12 princes. 12 tribes. Okay, now another 23 belong to the chiefs of Asaph. Okay. So, okay, there's a whole problem. This is the exact number, whatever. But anyway, it was 36. Between all the mishpachas there, there were 36 crowns. Okay, so they all gave in. The Yisrael Shah, Mishpat Gadol, the Kapasa goes on. So now you understand why. When they first went, it was Yosef and the Egyptians, and the brothers are up at the rear, because the Egyptians didn't respect the brothers. But when in the middle of the funeral, they see that all the crown princes are putting their thorns around them. They respect Yaakov. That means his children must be important too. So when they come back, they let them lead. So now, the Torah then continues. Vayispudu sham mispeit gadol v'kavimeit. So in this place of Gor Hanatad, this place where they put the 36 crowns, Torah says it was a very great, strong eulogy. And look how strong it was. Tana the Brisa says, Afilu susim vafilu chamorim me'elu me'elu. Even horses and even donkeys were mourning. What does that mean? Look what it says. The commentaries say that the people withheld food from the horses and donkeys in order to cause them to neigh and bray in hunger. The sounds they made complemented the moans of the mourners. So they made the animals make noise together with them. The Meshech Chachma says the animals were hungry because the famine that ended when Yaakov came to Egypt returned when he died. That's also another interesting fact. The hunger returned. Thus the horse and donkeys felt his loss. Marsha suggests that perhaps his animals were robed in black, as was the custom for royal funerals in the time of the Marsha. It was done to show that the grief over the royal person's demise was so great, it was as if the horses themselves were crying. Ben Yod explains that the reference may be to coarse and lowly people who pulled carts and were human horses and donkeys. So therefore, the last idea is saying that the ones who pulled the horses and the donkeys, they acted like horses and donkeys, were the ones who mourned. Okay, fine. Great mourning. Now we come to the famous story we all know about. So this was in the middle. Now, Kivin Shigil Amar Samachpel, and now they come to the patriarchal tomb. So they're not finished. Asa Esav comes along in Koma Akev, and he prevents them from continuing into burying him in the Me'arasa Machpelah. Amar Lahem, Esav made the following claim. He says, Mamre Kirya Sa'arba hi Chevron. Mamre, in the city of Kiryas Arba, literally means the city of four, which is Chevron. So, in other words, so that means it's a city of four because there's four pairs of people buried there. Okay? And that's what it's going to say next. That's why it's called Kiryas Arba. It's the city of four. There's four pairs of people buried there. V'yomar Rav Yitzchak, Yitzchak says, Kiryas Arba. Why is it called Kiryas Arba? Arba Zugas Hayu. There were four pairs. Who are they? Adam v'Chava, Adam and Eve, Avram and Sarah, Yitzchak and Rivka, and ultimately Yaakov and Rachel. But Yaakov wasn't yet buried there. So it only was seven. So Asa said the following. Iu kavla Leah bididei, right? He buried Leah in the space that was rightfully his. He says, and there I buried Leah. Okay, so there's one spot left. Vahai defayish, and the one that's left, didiu, it's mine. In other words, there are two spots. Yaakov, you get a spot, I get a spot. You want to bury your wife there, that's your business. I want that last spot. All right? Or you could say another pshat. Wait. So Amrule. So they replied to him, no. Zivinto, you sold it. Don't you remember with the beans? You were hungry, you sold it. So Amrule, he said, Nehi desvina bechirusa. Yes, I sold the bechora, which is the extra portion. But Pishitusa, but my single portion, he said, did I sell it? In other words, you know, a Bechor gets a double portion. So how do you look at it? Let's say a father leaves $300. So how does it work? So the Bechor gets a double portion, but means in addition, everybody gets a single portion. So the one, both regulars, both the Bechor and the regular son get one portion, which is $100. The Bechor gets an extra $100. Okay, so yes, he got a double portion, but I still get my single portion. Right, I sold him the double portion, but I didn't sell my single portion.
So what's the double portion?
So our portion should be equal. He gets one burial space, and I get one burial space. And then other things you can get, but at least I get one burial space. Amrule, they said to him, Ain, yes, you sold your portion also to Yaakov, for Yaakov told us on his deathbed, Dichsiv, Bikivri, I want you to bury me in my grave, Asher Karisi Li, which I acquired for myself in the land of Canaan. Okay, look what the Medrash says. After Yitzhak's death, Yaakov said to him, is it possible the wicked Esau will be buried among the righteous? What did Yaakov do? He took all the silver and gold that he had from the house of Lavan and made a heap out of them. He said to Esau, which you prefer, this heap or this grave? Yosef chose the heap, and Yaakov took the burial place. So there was a second sale that went on. Later on, he said, listen, you know, I got the birthright, but, you know, there's still, you have one claim to the cave, to the grave. Do you want money? For money? No problem. So they said, it's our father's, you sold it. What's the word kirisi? Ain kira, the expression kira, eloshim machiras, expression of sale. He said, the grave which I bought. Shekain, because we find Bekarche Hayam in the cities of the sea, the places abroad, Hayukarin Lumechira Kira, they call sale the word Kira. It's pretty similar. Mechira Kira, just missing a mem. So you sold it. So what does Esau say? Amali says, Havali Garte, get me the bill of sale. I don't believe you, a bunch of liars. You Jews are liars. You Israelis are liars. You just claim it. Never happened. Show me the bill of sale. Amalei, they said, Igerta b'arad Yisrael. The bill of sale is in Egypt. We all live. It's in the safety deposit bank in the First World Bank of Cairo. So what do you expect? You know, we don't schlep a bill of sale with us. Well, it says, anyway, Ume'ei Nezel. So you expect us to fetch it? Yeah, because I think you're a bunch of liars. Okay, what are they going to do? So Nezel Naftali. So Naftali should go. Why Naftali? The Kolil Kiyayola. Because he's swift as a deer. Because this is the bracha that Yaakov gave him. Naftali, Ayala Shulcha. Naftali is a deer let loose. Hanose Nimre Shefer, who delivers beautiful sayings. So, Altikri, Omer Rabba says, Altikri, don't read Imre Shefer. Don't pronounce Imre Shefer, beautiful sayings. Ella Imre Sefer, statements of the book. Naftali is the one who delivered the document containing the legal, the document containing the legal statements. So he starts running. He's a fast guy. He'll make it in maybe a day or two. He can run a marathon. So what's going on? So meanwhile, the body's just sitting there, sitting in the hot sun in Hebron. Just sitting there. They're waiting around. Now, Hushim braid the Dun. Now, Dun was one of the 12 sons of Yaakov. He had only one son, and his name was Hushim. So Taman Hava, he was there. Now, here's the problem. Not a problem, but V'yekirin le'edna, but he was hard of hearing. So he didn't know what's going on. He just sees they're walking, he's standing, and then it's nothing's happening. And he doesn't know this whole thing that's going on. Amarle, he says, my aunt, what's going on? Why aren't we burying our Zaidi? From Amarle, they said, Kama'akav, hi, Esav is holding it up. Ad the Asi Naftali, until Naftali comes back from Egypt with the bill of sale. Amarle, oh, Chushim said to them, until Naftali comes back from Egypt, which could be a day or two, or who knows how long. Should my grandfather lie in disgrace? So what did he do? He took a hold of a staff, a good stick. And what did he do? He hit Esav on the head, killing him instantly. That's the way to go.
That's the way Esav died.
Wham! And others say that his head, you know, so now what happened? Nitra Nene, Esav's eyes popped out. Venoflu Akarad Yaakov, and fell on Yaakov's feet in the coffin. Okay? So, interesting. Look, you know, this famous vort we know that the Zohar said that originally Leah was destined for Esav. Leah was the eldest of the two sisters. She was supposed to marry Esav, who was the eldest of two brothers. It was supposed to be Leah to Esav, and Rivka and Rachel to Yaakov. But she davened and davened and prayed and prayed and prayed till her eyes became very not pretty. And that changed her destiny, right? But still Esav wanted her. right? And so even in death, he wanted to be buried next to Leah. So therefore, the eyes that wanted her were the same eyes that popped out. That was the punishment. Eye for an eye, as they say. Well, that's what some say.
Similar. It hit on the head.
Anyway, even though Yaakov was dead, Paschina Yaakov, then Yaakov opened his eyes, V'achayich, and he smiled. Okay? You know, he got the last laugh. Okay. So that's how Esav died. V'hayinu d'chsiv, and this is what it means in Tehillim, when David HaMelech said, Yismach tzadik ki chozom nokom. The righteous will righteous when he sees vengeance, right? Because that's, finally, Esav got his vengeance. And the pasuk continues, Pa'om of Yirchatz v'dam ha'roshav, he shall bathe his feet in the blood of the wicked ones. Okay, so that's what happened. And now we see, Ba'os Hashah, at that time, Niskayman of Vosheshah Rivka, the prophecy of Rivka, which is coming up in a couple of weeks, finally came true. She didn't realize what she was saying. If you recall, after Yaakov stole the blessings, Esav said to himself, he's going to kill Yaakov. So therefore, Rivka went to Yitzchak, didn't tell him that, but she said, you know, just it's time for Yaakov to get a shidduch, so we can send him away. But what did Rivka say to herself? Tichsiv, Lama, she said to Yaakov, get out of here. Lama eshkal gam shnechem yochad. Why should I lose both of you on one day? Because what's going to happen? Esav's going to try to get you. You're going to kill Esav. Then Esav's children will kill you. I'm going to lose you both on one day. So she said, she was afraid, so she didn't realize what she was prophesizing. And it comes out they date on the same day. The Gemara says, wait, not exactly. They really didn't die on the same day, because Yaakov died 30 days earlier, because they embalmed him for 30 days. But they were buried on the same day. So that's how, she was close.
Somewhere else,
but it was on the same day, right? Now, so now let's just stop over there for a minute. So what do you see? You see her prophecy came true. They at least were buried on the same day. So we'll just have to end with one question. The question is, Vusepis Achushim was able to have the guts to kill Esav and nobody else did.
Exactly.
Especially the one who's deaf. So Chaim Shmulevitz has a tremendous answer. The answer, he says, is people can get ugeweint to situations. You can get acclimated to any situation. Any situation, and the Germans knew this very well. You know, you slowly, a little bit, you start with a Kristallnacht, and you say, oh, that's pretty bad, but Mirchusam, things will get better. Then you start making Nuremberg laws. Okay, it's not good, but Mirchusam, things will get better. Slowly, till he says, we're going to send you away somewhere else. Okay, he's going to send you somewhere else. And then, so before you know it, you're in the cattle cars, and it's too late. Now, people say, why didn't the Jews fight back? You know what? Because he was smart. A little bit. People can get used to terrible situations, but you got to do it slowly, because man by nature can acclimate. So no matter how bad it is, you can get used to it. That's what Paro did to them as well. So look what happened. The same thing with the brothers. They want to bury their father. Now they want to bury their brother. So Esav starts making a whole discussion. First, he slows them down. He has a criticism. He says, listen, it's mine. And they start arguing. And they go back and forth and back and forth. And slowly, they're getting used to the fact that the father's not being buried. You understand? So then you can start sitting and let your father lie in disgrace, because you got slowly sucked into this. Chushim was deaf.
He didn't hear.
He deaf. He doesn't know. He knew one. He knew what was at, he comes in at the end. Everybody else, slowly. He goes, what? What are you telling me? He's been sent for the last 3 hours? Wham! Because he didn't get acclimated to the situation. So you have to be very careful. This is a very, very big yisod, because that's where assimilation comes for Yidden. Slowly, we get acclimated. So you get used to, the Arabs are being geniuses at this. We're used to the fact that the Arabs can do what they want, and we have to restrain ourselves. And the whole world has made it very easy. And now we have to excuse ourselves. We have to excuse ourselves. If a stranger would walk in from planet Mars and just come down and see for the first time what's going on, say, I don't get it. These guys are stabbing them. Shoot them. Throw them all out. But for 30, 40 years, right, they're getting used to the fact that the monkeys in suits are diplomats. right? And we're going to give them a state. We're going to give them this. So the whole world's got used to the fact that Israelis are terrible. And that's it. And the Israelis believe it too. And we have to worry about what they say. And any other country... So slowly, slowly, you need some assessment. You need. That's where you find yourself in these bad situations. You get used to these things. You have to sometimes step back and put yourself out of the situation. And you need a. That's what you need, a new face. So you need Mashiach to come.
Yeah.
Mashiach's going to come and say, what the heck is going on over here? Boom! So that's, you have to be careful not to fall into those traps.